is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
It's another Monday evening. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. I am your host, Veronica Monet. If you haven't voted yet, I know a lot of people have voted early, but I want to remind you to get out there and vote tomorrow if you haven't voted yet. And if you happen to reside in the state of California, please be sure and mark your box for Proposition 35, a big fat no. We do not want to pass Proposition 35. It says it's the anti-trafficking bill. Sounds good. It is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Check it out. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me or call me. You can find me over at Veronica at the shamefreezone.com. Veronica at the shamefreezone.com. Not too late to get some feedback on how to fill out your ballot tomorrow. Okay, this evening I have a good friend of mine on as a guest. Her name is Chris Ellen. Chris and I actually met at something we refer to lovingly as SISI. SISI stands for San Francisco Sex Information. We are both graduates of their amazing, amazing sex educator certification program. It's a 60-hour program, which inundates you with information about sex, but, well, it's about 12 times that of what most medical doctors get. So it's pretty cool. And Chris has gone on to specialize in couples' sexual challenges. I think she's going to be giving us some tools tonight on how couples can enjoy rekindling their and reinvigorating their relationship. And we're going to be talking about couples' libido, tools to reconnect the passion in relationships. So Chris has worked with over 600 individuals from a wide range of backgrounds and lifestyles and sexual orientations and relationship models. She's dedicated to helping couples reconnect and also helping couples with libido differences. I think that's really interesting. I know in my practice I run into couples who have some kind of some disagreements on the type of sex they want to have and how often they want to do it. And it's interesting because there's so few tools out there readily available for that kind of discrepancy. So without further ado, Chris Ellen, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica.
Great to have you here.
Yay!
So I think our listeners would probably like to know what it was that sent you down the sexual path, kind of an unusual occupation, one that I find eminently rewarding, but what were your reasons for getting into it?
My reasons for getting into it was I grew up in a conservative area that did not have sufficient sexual education. And I know in my life, I was always looking for answers about human sexuality and how people related in the sexual realm. And all I got were these very vivid media images that really didn't give me any tools or answer any of my questions. They just put this blatant media presence out. So when I went to college, I found my first human sexuality class, and I was in love. I found the academic statistics and the way to study sexology that really moved my heart and later on would move my soul. So I was really passionate about bringing these tools to others, because I know how frustrating it can be when we don't have a language to talk about our sexuality.
And, you know, I know you've got a pretty tight relationship with your family, spent a lot of time with them, or anyway, you know, as opposed to some of us who get into the sexual education into things and maybe feel a little alienated from our family members. Just wondering how you've been able to maintain their understanding about your profession.
Well, I'm very blessed with a mother who's very supportive, and I remember the first time that I was in her presence and I was sharing a coaching call. And after I hung up the phone, and she was like, Chris Ellen, you're so compassionate. And I'm like, yes, this is why I'm called to this work, to touch people's lives, to add value and education. And so that's one aspect of my family. My father is also very supportive in a different way. He told me that he loves me no matter what, which was very buoyant and beautiful. And also, too, though, I do have my challenges. I mean, we do have a world of sex-negative messages. So I have parts of my family that shun me, and that creates pain in my heart, because this, for me, is truly a service to connect with others.
Mm. Wow. Yes, well, it is a service, and I think it's, it's very brave to, and I'm so sorry to hear that there are family members that shun you. I know my mother has, she came to actually a presentation I did at Oregon State University last year, and I give her a lot of credit for showing up, because she's a conservative Christian, but boy, I think when we got the video about the female ejaculation, she had a really hard time staying focused.
Yeah.
So, I guess, depending on the backgrounds of our relatives and friends, I do sometimes try to be understanding and realize we're kind of birthing a new paradigm here, which, invokes less shame. And I understand, actually, if we go over to your website, which is CouplesLibidoSolutions.com. That's CouplesLibidoSolutions.com. And over here on the welcoming page, I see that you're actually approaching the whole idea of feeling shame for your desires. What are some of the tips that you offer couples when it comes to sexual shame?
One of my most powerful tips about sexual shame really is something that silence cocoons. So for me, communication is so sexy. Communicating and getting to a place to be able to speak what is inside of our hearts to our partners is so freeing. And in a communication-rich environment, shame cannot flourish. So my first hottest tip is communication with your partner is essential.
I think, communication is kind of a cornerstone for just about anything with couples. And it seems like, I noticed you've also got a background in nonviolent communication. Mm-hmm. And do you find that that comes handy when you are teaching communication skills to couples?
I love nonviolent communication. It's a wonderful tool, and yes, giving people the tools to speak what emotions you're feeling and be able to say, I am feeling angry, I am feeling sad, and then giving voice to whatever needs that are directly connected, so connecting your feelings and the needs and asking for the needs that you have alive inside of you is so powerful. But the first part is just learning your own emotional intelligence. Learning that place inside of yourself that's like, oh, this feeling is empathy. This feeling is sadness. That's what this feeling feels like inside of myself.
Yes, absolutely. Empathy is a huge, huge part of it. And I agree. You start off by learning how to have empathy for yourself, and you're able to extend that empathy outward to other people, and most importantly to your partner. I noticed here that you talk to couples about the uncomfortable silence in the bedroom. So who do you find is the person who winds up bringing the couple to a session with you? Does it tend to be the male or the female? And then, of course, obviously, I know that you work with couples who are not heterosexual, but lesbian and gay. But since people are always so intrigued by gender differences, I'm just wondering if you've noticed any.
What I found with the gender differences, it's not so much of the gender of the person who's bringing the conflict in and speaking that powerful thing of, like, we need help. It's the person who feels the most frustrated, who has the most charge around whatever is currently alive in the relationship. So if the woman is feeling very sexually charged and has a very high libido, and her husband perhaps does not feel like he's as sexually available, then it will be the woman who would be like, we need help. This is something that is creating conflict in our relationship, and we can bring it to the table. However, I've seen equally number of men who have been like, there's something missing. There's something not alive in our relationship, and I really feel like we need to have a conversation. So they'll look for tools and ways to fix the relationship. And sometimes that brings them to me. And I am happy to work with whoever brings it because it's the most alive for them.
Do couples really fight that much about how much sex they're having? Is that your experience?
Well, since that's my specific niche, then yes. I hear from a lot of couples who are very specifically not complete in their sexual relationship. On the whole, I do believe it's not something that's talked about often in our culture, as the permission to talk about sex is still one of those things that you say we're birthing into that permission zone, into the permission of the shame-free zone. So when people do have the courage to talk about sexuality, it brings up whatever is alive in their relationship. And I happen to work with people who have libido differences.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I end up getting, certainly have gotten quite a few couples who have gone extended periods of time without sexual contact, sometimes up to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And do you encounter that?
Yes, there is, and it depends on where they are in their relationship cycle. Like, we can talk about the honeymoon phase of the first 2 years, and all of the wonderful chemicals are very alive and stirred inside of our bodies, so sort of the romantic rose-colored glasses. And then as time progresses, the chemicals shift, and we come more into attachment phase, and where our physical bodies have different responses to our relationships. So there are many relationships that have prioritized the kids or their work or different commitments, and where sexuality gets sort of pushed under the rug or under the bed. And that's where sometimes tools to bring that into awareness can be so powerful.
I like that, under the rug and under the bed. that's funny. It kind of perplexes me, actually, how couples can go so long before they get help. Do you have any theories about why couples might wait so long and kind of, you know, suffer through the lack of a sex life or a really bad one?
I do, and I've spoken to clients and people who have let the bedroom door cool. And sometimes it really just depends on what's going on in the individuals. I know I've spoken to one couple where one of the partners had really severe pain, where it was actually painful to be physically intimate. And so what they've done is create different ways to connect intimately, where they can still connect and affirm their relationship, but the actual sexual charge is not able to be present because it's painful for the female of the couple. This is a heterosexual couple. So I spoke to the couple and I was like, how can you go so long with exactly what you're asking? And the male of the couple is like, I am so empathetic to my partner that we create different ways to connect that aren't necessarily sexual.
And when you talk about, I know for some people intercourse is sex and everything else is not, and then, you know, for other people, obviously, intercourse isn't even something they're interested in, or and they certainly consider that they're having sex. But when you talk about other ways to connect that are not sexual, are you just talking about, you know, friendship, conversation, or were you maybe referring to erotic activities that don't involve intercourse?
Right. That's a great distinction. I'm specifically not talking about erotic connection because with this specific couple, the pain is from endometriosis, which is a swelling of the uterus. And so any arousal can bring pain. So they've had to create non-sexual ways of connecting. And this is where the book, The Five Love Languages, comes really into handy. Is if you can connect with your partner in a way that they feel seen and nurtured, doesn't necessarily have to be sexual, although I know my personal preference would be something else. But for different couples, if they can connect, and this couple specifically worked on ways of intimately connecting, such as nurturing touch, spending time watching a favorite movie, going to their favorite restaurant. So it was really about creating quality time for the couple.
Now, is your work, you know, there's a lot of people who want to know the difference between a sex therapist, a sexologist, a surrogate. What is a surrogate? And I'm wondering, you know, can you explain the differences between those? And also let us know what your work entails. Do you do any kind of hands-on application? Are you a sexological body worker? Or
Chris Owen is my sex education facilitation. And so what I do is I create an intimate conversation with couples. My work is mostly counseling and in speaking form. I do offer home play assignments where a couple can go home and work through some of these specific tools on their own and then have them report back to me. But specifically for this, as a sex coach, it's mostly talk therapy and having a conversation and also being a guide so that they have a roadmap for their sexual exploration. Now, the differences between the many different types of educators. You were talking about sexologists, and I do consider myself a sexologist. For me, a sexologist is someone who studies sex in an academic and educational manner, and I've been studying this for 16 years. So I love this topic. I'm very passionate about it, and I love sharing it with people who are ready to move their sex to the next level. As for sexological body workers, my understanding is that is a specific certification program, which is a hands-on certification program where the facilitators work certain spots with trigger release within the genitals and moving the energy of the body through the genitals.
Very interesting. Well, okay. So I'm still a little unclear. Do you touch your clients or do you give them homework assignments that they do at home with each other?
I do not touch my clients. I give them homework assignments where they go home and work together with each other.
Okay. And, you know, the same here. I don't touch my clients either. But I find that sometimes there'll be a little bit of a skepticism about how effective can I really be? And I'm wondering if you ever get posed that question, and if so, how you might answer it.
How effective could a counselor be that's not doing hands-on? Well, I think there's so much room for many different kinds of work. I mean, I really honor those who do hands-on work within the realm of sexuality. I do believe that is its own unique flavor. The somatic body has a lot of power. And also, too, so much of this work is about presence and compassion and having a safe, sacred space for people to be able to step into, to relax, to breathe, and realize that their sexuality is so precious. I think that is the safe space that coaches and sex therapists and counselors can provide without doing the hands-on body work.
Hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned that one of your clients was experiencing pain. Do you recommend that your clients go see a medical doctor first so that they can kind of rule out some complications? I know I've started taking referrals from doctors, OBGYNs and medical doctors, because I love the fact that I already know where their health is at, you know, whether or not they're on antidepressants, whether or not they've got any issues with cardiovascular or diabetes, which can, of course, affect sexual function. So it's just kind of nice. And, you know, sometimes you get their hormone levels tested just to make sure they don't have a, physiological reason for a lowered libido or altered sexual response. Do you ever ask people to go see the doctor?
Yes, definitely. I know that having an idea of your sexual and physical health will only aid you in sort of taking off some of the different challenges which may or may not be happening in your body. So mm-hmm. having that sort of idea of your general health, having an idea of what medications you're on, all of these things are really important tools for a holistic approach. And I really like naturopathic doctors. I know there's a number of them in the area, and I do work with people who are doing more of the holistic care. But the Western form of medicine does have its does have things that it can do for us. So if you do get your hormones tested, that can be a great indicator if there's something physiologically that you need to address with your medical provider.
Well, I noticed that you kind of specializing in what you call the pain body in relationship. And there is a statistic that actually coming out of the Kinsey Institute that 30% of women have experienced vaginal pain while having sexual relations. That's a very disturbing number. You know,
yeah.
About 1/3 of American women having experienced vaginal pain while having sexual intercourse. But what do you mean by the pain body, and specifically, I guess, as it applies to relationships?
Well, that's a great question, Veronica. In my experience, in my practice, I have experienced how pain can create its own set of signs and symptoms in our physical body. And if we're talking about subtle energy, which is slightly more advanced way to see the body, there are technologies that allow us to really see the physical body beyond just this skin and bones and move outside of that into the subtle body. And in my experience, you can see there is ways of seeing in the subtle body pain and how it manifests in the physical body. Because like Carolyn Mays says, our biology is a direct reflection of our energy body. So when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about seeing the pain in the client's body and how it shows up in the relationship, because the relationship is between the two people in the together. And the pain is oftentimes very noticeable. Oftentimes it comes out in a relationship when there's conflict or there's an emotional challenge.
So okay, you're helping them kind of explore some of this, what would return that psychosomatic causes of pain. But I guess you would definitely want to go to a doctor to get that ruled out, so we know it's not a medical thing and we can start working on the psychological aspects of it. Who has more pain during sexual intercourse, men or women?
Well, this National Survey of Sexual Health and Behavior was a survey of 18 to 92-year-olds, so you had a wide spectrum of age range, studied 2,523 women. And you were talking about that. 30%, a third of the population of women incurred pain, whereas around 5 to 6% of men incurred pain during intercourse. So that's quite a difference.
Yeah. No, it really is. And what do we think the major contributing factors are for that?
Well, the major contributing factors are varied, of course. What I have seen in the study and I have looked up and found in my own practice is many times there is a lack of lubrication for a woman. Who is not fully aroused, not fully embodied, not fully in her sexual peak. And so one of the challenges I have to the sex positive, sex educator community is to bring this conversation forward so that we can speak to these women and really educate greater amounts about just feeling your body. Feeling and acknowledging what's happening in your body and being able to communicate that with your partner.
So we're back to the communication, always important.
One of the cornerstones, yes.
Yeah, definitely. So what are some of the things that you would, if you know somebody's listening and thinking, gee, I wonder if we should go, consult with Chris Ellen. What are some of these questions that you might ask a potential client to ask themselves, trying to figure out if you're a fit?
Well, it's really for me, what in your relationship is working? Is there something
in your relationship is working? Okay.
Yeah. First thing, what's working? What is really the cornerstone of your relationship? Awesome. Are there any challenges in your relationship that you're looking to bring illumination to? Do you have something specific that you haven't spoken to your partner about? Is there something that you feel ashamed or shy about communicating with your partner?
Okay.
Are you getting the sexual interaction that you desire for libido? And has your relationship shifted? Has it changed? Were you having a certain amount of sex when you first were in a relationship, when you first got together? And has that changed over time? If so, have you talked about it with your partner?
Yeah. Do you find that most of the couples that come to see you have actually talked about it?
Many of the couples that come to see me, one person in the couple is very, it's very present for them. And I find that most of the couples have not talked about it. They're exploring options. They're looking for ways to address it. And they have not talked about it with their partner.
Yeah, I'm always really shocked at the kind of conversations that couples are not having, even though they share a bed, they share child rearing, they're having sex. You know, it's like on the outside, it's very, very positive, you know, very, very intimate. But when it comes to being able to talk about it, it's like, no, we couldn't talk about that. I wouldn't know what to say. So how do you help people start talking about sex with each other? How do you help people talk about sex with people they have sex with? I mean, you know?
Oh, I would really love to see when couples can talk dirty to each other. I love offering the talk dirty to me exercise, where where you invite your partner to share the hottest fantasy that they have. So you give permission. Honey, I would really love to hear something that's really just amazingly hot for you. And then you create that safe space and actively listen to the other partner as they share their deepest, sexiest fantasy. Because really it's about giving permission for us to be erotically charged. So that's one of the ways that I really enjoy couples and guiding them through that process of looking at their erotic fantasies and looking at their erotic roadmaps. What is it that is charged for them? What is juicy? Getting back in touch with themselves so they can share it with their partners.
I think a lot of people are ashamed, however. They're kind of afraid to even say those dirty words. I mean, just as an example, how would you, if you were terrified to say something, but you thought it would be really hot, how would you go forward?
Well, there's something that's really powerful called the bossy massage. This is all about empowering voice, reclaiming our empowering voice. So if speaking the fantasies which are inside of your head is challenging, you can always invite and share with your partner and have them do exactly what you tell them to by giving you a massage. And the bossy massage is about, okay, honey, I would really want you to caress my hand with a nice firm pressure, your thumb in the palm of my hand, sweeping your fingers out to my fingertips. And then I would like you to work your way up my arm and continuing on through the whole body. And as we get more comfortable with speaking our desires, then we can move into different realms of the erotic.
We were talking about couples wanting to connect and create more intimacy and passion in their relationships. And this is something that my guest, Chris Ellen, provides. If you're interested, you can go find it on her website, couplesLibidoSolutions.com. Chris, are you there?
Hi, Veronica.
sorry about that, Chris. Okay, so I was just telling our listeners that they can go to couplesLibidoSolutions.com. To find out more about your services. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole idea of couples losing interest in long-term relationships. I know we touched on that a little bit, but you were talking a little bit back about how the couples go through different stages in the romantic life of a relationship. And wondered if we could reconnect with that a little bit.
Wonderful. I'd love to. There's a great book called Why We Love by Helen Fisher, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love. And I really love what she shares with us about the different stages of a relationship and the physiological changes in our bodies.
Okay. So physiological changes in the body, like what?
Well, what I've found in my work is that romantic love has a lot to do with dopamine, which is a type of neurotransmitter. So the first stage, what we can call liminal or romantic love, usually is about the first 2 years, might be a little longer, a little shorter, but on average about 2 years. So that's when the body is really pumping out a lot of dopamine. And we're really connected, sort of almost passionately obsessed with our beloved. We see, we love, we connect, we're really intensely in tune to them. And then Another neurochemical comes in which fosters attachment. It's not so much of the dopamine, but it really connects, and this is sort of for that phase after perhaps the reproductive cycle has passed through, and now we're in a place of, okay, we're bonding. It's a gentling. It's not that passionate fire, but it's doing things together. It's playing in those beautiful realms of gentle love. So there are a few things that we can do when, if we want to keep that spark alive, we really want to keep that dopamine, romantic love charged. And I can give you some things about that later if you're interested. But so the next
let's talk about it now.
You're ready for that now?
I think most couples would probably be sitting on the edge of their seat wondering, okay, so what can we do? I don't think that most people are looking to kind of settle into that so-called mature love where it's not hot. Otherwise, I don't think we'd be selling all those sex manuals and sex toys out there. I think most people are looking for the hot stuff. So what's in your toolbox for that?
Wonderful. Well, you really want to keep things unexpected. One of the stimulators of the dopamine receptors is doing things that are atypical, doing things that charge your system, and then you're doing them together with your beloved. So something unique. If you haven't gone to a certain place that's really thrilling for you, doing things that are going to charge that dopamine system will help you keep the passion alive in your relationship. That's where some of our adrenaline can come in and be really helpful. Creating date nights so that you can do things and you have time and space in your relationship to dedicate to each other. And make sure it's something unique, something dynamic. You really want to focus on things that you might not have done before, where that sort of naughtiness comes out, pushing the envelope a little bit. What is it in your relationship that could bring more passionate connection? So that is a really big thing that you can do. And making sure you have enough time without the stress is key. So scheduling, actually scheduling date nights, scheduling hot sex. Put it in your calendar. Mark it. Let's have hot sex. This is a teamwork thing. You both can work together to bring the relationship to the next level.
I have often worked with young couples who have got one or two children, and it becomes very difficult actually to make time to be intimate. Do you have any tips for young couples who are in a kind of a time crunch? They're both holding down jobs, perhaps, and with childcare and everything, and, you know, babies that are crying, it can be very difficult sometimes to create room for the sex.
Oh, I so understand this. I have some good friends that I have just spent some time with, and I have gained so much compassion for parents and new parents who are doing their very best just to keep the roof over the heads, the bellies full, the ballet lessons, and I have so much compassion. And I also see how sex can get pushed back and how it becomes something that just isn't created space for. So one of the one things that I've really found that really speaks to this is creating a community, having other parents where you can schedule having play dates. So your child goes to a friend's parent's house, and each one of the parents has a different night off, one time a month, that's specifically adult time. So your kids can go to your friend's house for the night. You can create that space in your life and be like, this is our relationship space. This is the time that we're dedicating to communicating, to empathizing, to creating connection and intimacy, so that we can have our full presence to share with our little ones, because it's so important.
Yep, it's definitely important. Can you say more about why it's important? Because I think a lot of couples, like we were saying, they kind of fall into this sexual ghetto, if you will. I mean, there's like nothing going on, and then they just don't bother to revive it. So I'm wondering, can you tell the listeners why it's so important to invest in a good sex life?
That's a great question. It's so important to invest in your sex life because the more you use it, the more you'll desire it. Our bodies are chemical factories where when we're keeping those pumps primed, we desire sexuality. It's one of our needs and one of our physical expressions. So we get the oxytocin and we get the dopamine and we get those amazing chemicals that bond us. And when we don't create the space for it, we can feel depressed. There are studies out that show a depression if you're not getting the sexuality that your body needs. We can get, it's shown that sexuality increases happiness. So there are many physiological reasons why keeping yourself sexually active is actually really healthy. It's been shown that you actually have better health as you keep your sexuality invigorated.
Yes, it certainly does have a lot of benefits to our health, including, I think, just about every aspect of health, but certainly mental and emotional health, big contributor there. And I think creativity, you know, passion, creativity can really be an important contributor there as well. And even, you know, for people who are busy with their children and think they can't really afford the time, I think it's something to think twice about, because if there is sexual bliss in the home, that's going to raise the frequency in the home and create a family atmosphere that's probably a lot more conducive to communication and connection and just a more peaceful attitude. Wouldn't you agree?
Very much so, yes.
Yeah.
People, if everybody is connecting and getting their needs met, I'm imagining that that would be a much happier and well-expressed home than if someone is longing for that connection with their partner. I know it creates a lot of pain in ourselves and our emotional bodies if we're not getting the physical touch and the connection that we desire.
Mm-hmm. So true. So true. Well, we can go back now. I know you were going to tell us about the different stages of romance. After the relationship starts to maybe go into its attachment phase, I think is what the term you used. Some people call this the maturing of the relationship. Do you think the models that are out there that kind of purport to say that romantic love just lasts for 2 years, do you think they're really based upon the idea that people are actively working to sustain their sexual connection, or are some of those models actually maybe based on the fact that couples kind of fall into these sexless patterns because they don't put a premium or emphasis on the sex life?
For me, I think it's a physiological definition. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be that way. I know many couples that actively cultivate a healthy sex life and a very dynamic sex life. So for me, I feel like it's a physiological definition that when you're not being conscious of the body and the physical processes in the body, that can be an explanation, but it doesn't have to be a limitation. It can be addressed, and you can bring vitality back into your relationship.
Okay, so you think the physiologically people start to go into that, but they maybe they're called upon to continue to rebirth the relationship and rebirth the sex life.
Definitely. It just reminds me of anything that's worth doing is worth doing well. So it does take time and effort to really put into your relationship and to create that vitality in your relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. And, you know, people go get their teeth checked, every 6 months or cleaned. Get their teeth cleaned and examined every 6 months. They get their eyes examined every year. They usually get a physical every year. There's a lot of upkeep to being in a human body, but it's so very rare that people will actually invest in their sex life. So, and speaking of that, I know that, a lot of my clients ask me, well, how many times do I have to come see you? And my answer to that is, well, as many times as you want. On average, however, I would say most of the couples that I work with come to see me somewhere between 5 and 10 times. And since I am a coach, they usually see the results that they're seeking in a pretty short period of time, whereas, psychotherapy can go on kind of forever. So I'm wondering, how often do your clients come to see you, or is it kind of a one-time thing?
No, I have a multiple-month package. I usually work with clients for 3 months. As you, a coach, understand, they're sort of an action-oriented. So people usually have something specific in their relationship they're looking to work on. And so a 3-month package really will set the tone for how to move through and how to address these challenges in the relationship. And in my experience, there's always something, another facet to look at, but really people are very focused one challenge at a time, so you can go really deep into it. So I have a 3-month package, and that tends to be working with people twice a month. So it's a dedicated process, and homework assignments are interspersed between sessions.
I always like to say I give the funnest homework there is. I'm sure you do, too. I can't imagine boring homework from a sex educator or a sexologist. Can you?
No. I can't. Part of this work that really is exciting is bringing that creativity and offering it to my clients. I know I just did a class where I was teaching people about the pleasures of male genitals, and I had so much fun creating the visuals for that class that that's really part of the passion of this work, and I'm sure you do a great job in bringing that passion to your clients as well.
Yes, I saw you were teaching at Good Vibes on October 28th, and it was called Discover His Family Jewels. That does sound like a fun class.
It was great. I made a treasure map of the male genitalia, and it was
great.
A really great class.
Oh, I love teaching at Good Vibrations. They treat you well, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Very grateful for stores that encourage education and exploration.
Okay. Well, Chris, any last words here before I've got to sign off? I see it's we're straight up at 10 o'clock. We started a little bit after, and we had a little technical difficulty there, but we are going to have to wrap up. And I want to tell our listeners one more time that they can find you at CouplesLibidoSolutions.com. That's CouplesLibidoSolutions.com. And I'm wondering if you have any upcoming classes or whatever that you want them to know about.
Not currently. Right now, my main focus, I have a few spots open in my practice, so I'm just looking forward to hearing from anybody who's tonight's call touched them and they want to do an initial consultation. And Veronica, I really want to thank you for having this show and having conversations around the shame-free sex zone and really connecting with an audience and offering your wisdom. So thank you for having me on. I'm very grateful for your service, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. And it's always fun to connect with you again and have a lot of admiration for your work. And to our listeners, I want to let you know that next week I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Chanel Alex and Rob Alex. They are sacred sensual teachers. And we're going to be talking also again about couples. Maybe we got a little theme going on here. We get past Proposition 35 and start getting back to things like pleasure. So talking about empowering couples by teaching them how to combine the sacred and the sensual. Really, really rich topic for me because the Shame-Free Zone is all about where sex and spirit come together. And before I sign off, I am going to make one more plug for the voting polls tomorrow. Please get out and vote. And when you do, if you live in California, be sure to vote no on Proposition 35. And if you've got any questions about why I would say such a thing, just drop me an email, veronica@theshamefreezone.com. That's it for tonight. Thanks so much. See you next Monday.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian.